Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The new tools and technologies associated with the internet have transformed our media experience. But what are they doing for and to journalism? That's the concern of AUT Associate Professor Martin Hirst in his new book, News 2.0. Welcome, Martin.
Thank you.
Now, your book is also subtitled, Can Journalism Survive the Internet? Is it? Are things that bad?
Well, I think they are, Russell. If you look at the bigger picture of what's happening in global media, you'd have to say that journalists and journalism are under some kind of threat at the moment. I think there's a crisis of public confidence, perhaps, in journalism today. We tend not to trust the media as much as we did 20 years ago. And I think for journalists, there's almost a kind of philosophical angst about what are we doing. It's like losing their way a little bit because of all the competition that's out there now from social media and so on.
And that competition is not going to go away, is it?
It's not. And I think my argument is really, I guess, along the lines of, can journalists, as opposed to the news industry, actually harness that power from below, if you like, and do something useful with it?
And you're not a believer, I gather, in the idea that citizen journalism will somehow rush in and fill the gap.
No, I'm not. And I'm a little bit dubious about the concept of citizen journalism, the way we use it, because I think it tends to be far too broad. And I prefer to call user-generated news-like content, which is, I guess, the broader category of accidental journalism, eyewitnesses, people taking photos and sending them to the BBC and that kind of thing, as opposed to journalism, which to me is more of a process of reflection, analysis, fact gathering and interpretation, and then writing some kind of or delivering some kind of narrative around that. So it seems to me citizen journalism is that kind of activity done by citizens for the purposes of advancing their citizenship. Accidental or journalism is, I guess, the kind of things you see on YouTube out of Egypt at the moment.
You mentioned there's a lot of a lack of faith and increasingly lack of trust in journalism by the public. How much of that is caused by the discussions on the internet, which seem to spend a lot of time slamming the MSM, the mainstream media?
I think what we've seen is with one of the things with the internet, with blogs and stuff like that, is the media can no longer get away with things that it perhaps used to. You know, for example, there's been all kinds of incidents where reporters have been caught out plagiarizing, doing all kinds of things,
making
misrepresenting facts, making stuff up, you know, and so the internet has given people the opportunity now, I guess, to forensically examine journalism in a way that we couldn't do 20 years ago. And I think that's having an impact. It's kind of holding journalists a bit more to account, perhaps, which is the upside of all that stuff.
It's a bit of a one-sided sort of thing as well, isn't it? I mean, journalism can't spend a lot of time slamming new media or the social media.
Well, it doesn't. I think journalism, the news media, I think, is actually part of the hype around social media. I mean, you know, every time you open the Herald, for example, in New Zealand, there's the how to win friends and influence people on Facebook, how to use Facebook as a marketing tool, how to do all of this and all of that. And even with Twitter, I was looking at the hashtag Egypt stream a couple of days ago, and the bloody annoying Al Jazeera ad at the top of the thing, I couldn't make it go away. You know, so the mainstream media is colonizing these social media spaces.
I've been really impressed with the way Al Jazeera has been able to employ all these platforms. I wonder whether that's perhaps it's got the freedom to do so because it doesn't have to make money. It survives by patronage.
Yeah, I think so. And that's interesting, that whole idea of what business model is going to work. But I think there are benefits, obviously, to harnessing that kind of stuff. It's increasing the number of sources. And it means, for example, in Egypt, that the state-run media can't just get away with lying about what's actually happening on the ground, because people can go, well, actually, no, it's not. Look at this on their mobile phone, whatever, they can share media. So it makes it harder for dictatorships to get away with just lying to people. And I think Al Jazeera is doing a good job in that situation, even though the signal is blocked off the satellite in there, people are still accessing it via the internet.
When it comes to overseas news, I mean, one of the dangers I've always thought about the internet when it comes to journalism is people self-selecting news. And Kiwis are known to not have a huge interest as a whole in what's happening overseas. Is that a real danger? Do you think that as we self-select more news by clicking on the sites that we want, that journalism as a whole suffers?
It can do, but I don't think it's all that... The traffic's not all that way, Damien, because by the same token, if you look at the stats around New Zealand, you can see that The Guardian and The Independent and The New York Times and so on are actually attracting a huge amount of traffic from New Zealand. So people are actually making the choice to broaden their consumption beyond what's in the daily papers and going to those sources. And you know, if you want good international news, you're virtually forced to do that because the Herald doesn't do a good job and the Don Post doesn't do a good job.
So that would argue, actually, that the editor of the Herald has been self-selecting the news for people for a long time and not necessarily necessarily the way they want.
They do, and they've got less space now, of course, less pages for global news. And, of course, they're driven, you know, you talk to people like Jeremy Rees and the people at Stuff, and they will tell you that a lot of their selection for online content and what goes in the paper the next day is driven by the click stream on the website. So the most popular stuff becomes the editor's pick, and that tends to then reflect itself back into the news agenda over the next few days.
Hmm. I was going to say, when you look at that, so the list of TV3 top stories all the time seems to be Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, that, you know, the top stories on the internet, though. How do you explain that?
Well, I think that's a difficult one, and it's very easy just to go, the audience is stupid, right? But I think you make a big mistake if you do that, because the audience is not stupid. I think that reflects a much broader cultural issue that we've got, which is around, if you like, the dumbing down of popular culture and the reification of celebrity, I think, is a huge, huge issue now. Everyone's looking at what's happening in Hollywood as setting the parameters for debate. You know, the fact that some rich Hollywood A-lister adopts a baby out of Malawi. Isn't that wonderful? And you know, it becomes a sort of heartwarming thing. But it's not real news, I don't think.
Well, as we noted on our TV show this week, the Stuff and the Herald website devoted about 10 times as many words to Martin Devlin as they did to the very important news that the Urawera 18 defendants will not have a jury trial.
Yeah. Important to whom, though, Russell? Important to whom?
This is one of the most important criminal cases in recent times.
Yeah, it's important to the public interest. I mean, it's all right to feed public curiosity about Hilton and all those people, but the real public interest and what affects our society in the terms of democratic decision-making are things like the Urawera's trial. You know, that's actually much more important. And the analysis of Key's decision to go early on the election is perhaps a lot more important to us than you know, Fashion Week and things like that.
Well, you mentioned one of the chapters in your book, you discuss the issue of trying to make money from news via the internet. I mean, is that going to continue to be one of the biggest hurdles?
It is, but you know what? I actually think that, and I hate to say this, but Rupert Murdoch's right. I mean, Rupert Murdoch, I actually want to do a study of Murdoch's speeches over the last 7 or 8 years. He's made some huge headline speeches. And I think if you track those and you track the News Limited share prices and you track what's actually happening, you'll find that Murdoch's influence is massive. And he's actually out in front there investing in all these new technologies like the, what's he calling it? The Daily, I think.
The Daily, which is on iPad, out this week.
An iPad application. So he's actually trying to colonize again these social media spaces, because the bottom line in traditional media, advertising revenues, etc., has bottomed out. Now it seems to be, you know, we're perhaps climbing out of that recession. But they do need to actually monetize the click stream a lot more in order to make money and keep up their profitability.
I want to ask you before we go, what do you think about WikiLeaks? Because I've been fascinated by the growing gulf between them and every media partner they've ever had. The latest one being The Guardian. They're now talking about suing David Lee, the great investigative journalist that Assange worked with. They seem to lack fairly large parts of journalistic practice. They're good at getting the leaks, but then are they journalists?
I don't think Julian Assange is a journalist. I mean, I don't think he is. I mean, he's a lot of things. He's very clever. He's, you know, he's articulate. He's whatever he is, but he's not a journalist, I don't think. But I actually think the WikiLeaks partnership with the mainstream media has been very important and very useful as a lesson in terms of how we might develop that collaborative model between amateurs and professionals in the public interest. The fact that they've fallen out is possibly due to Julian's personality and the fact that he's difficult to get on with.
Yes, his appalling personality, it would seem. I was interested that again, Al Jazeera had its own leak with the Palestine Papers and chose to do the same thing, went with The Guardian. These are quite interesting alliances, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and I think that I like that, and I think it's interesting it's The Guardian, because The Guardian, again, is a little bit outside that major commercial pressures. It's a trust model. It's not necessarily beholden to advertisers and so on. So it has a little bit more freedom, perhaps, than some other papers do.
It's still losing a power of money, though.
Well, everybody is in that game, aren't they, at the moment, even Murdoch.
I'd like you to channel your inner Murdoch, if you can, and make some predictions as to what's going to happen then. In say, 5 years' time, are we going to be waking up reading the newspaper? Who's going to be paying for it? What's it going to look like?
I think 5 years is a bit of a short window, because I think in 5 years things will have changed a little bit more, but perhaps not. It won't be, you know, something
Jetsons.
Completely.
It won't be the Jetsons just yet.
No, it won't be. But I think there'll be a lot more commercial pressures on social media spaces, particularly Twitter and Facebook and Flickr and YouTube and those kinds of things. You've already got the BBC and everybody in there trying to get up YouTube channels and this kind of stuff. So they recognize the value of the eyeballs, but they want to monetize it. And I think they actually will be able to do that within 5 years. If you look at the iReport model on CNN, it's a classic lesson they've learned from things like indie media and YouTube of how to harness the copyright on that user-generated material and turn it into a profit stream. So that, I think, is the five-year outlook. I think 10 to 15 years is more interesting, but, you know, I haven't got a crystal ball.
Well, Martin, thanks very much. We could have, I'm sure, talked for quite a bit longer, but the book's called News 2.0. It's in the shops now?
Yes, hopefully.
Oh, well done. That was a fascinating chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
And after the break, from bloggers to buskers.